not just the biggest iftar in the continent of Europe, but the biggest iftar in Western world.
Hello, 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 and welcome to this edition of The Jolly Heretic. Now, large numbers of Muslim men praying in Trafalgar Square. Why is it that this is nothing like Rishi Sunak celebrating Diwali in Downing Street? Why is it that this is in no way comparable to anything else? Why is it that this is uniquely offensive? Why is it that this really, really gets to us? What are the evolutionary psychological reasons for why it is so unnerving to see large numbers of Muslim men praying in the way that they are praying in Trafalgar Square? That is what I want to look at today. But before I do that, could you please do me a favour? Could you subscribe? Could you subscribe on YouTube, hit the like button, hit the bell button, leave a comment, and subscribe to my Substack. That's jollyheretic.com, where I put all the most base stuff I can't put on YouTube. In-person interviews, vlogs, blogs, films I make, a diary, all kinds of stuff. And if you like what I do, you can support me with the cost of a pint of beer a month. Okay, back to the video. So, what's going on? A few days ago, a very large number of Muslim men decided to pray in Trafalgar Square. Is there something about this that we can't quite articulate? Is there something about this that just gets to us, that we don't quite consciously understand? And the answer is yes. And as usual, evolutionary psychology will tend to help us to understand what is going on. First of all, symbolism. Muslims are very good at doing symbolic things. If 9/11 has taught us one thing, it is that Muslims understand the importance of symbolism. So there is a symbolism to large numbers of Muslim men gathering in Trafalgar Square. What is Trafalgar Square? Well, Trafalgar is it's originally a Muslim word, I believe. It's an Arabic word, Taraf al-Gabra, or something like that. That's what Trafalgar is. So it's actually a place. It's named after a place, an area that was once Muslim, that was once under Muslim control. And so it's almost like saying this place that was once under Muslim control is now under Muslim control again. Secondly, Trafalgar Square, despite the origins of the name Trafalgar, is a very important symbol of British control, of British imperialism, of British dominance, of British power. It relates, of course, to the Battle of Trafalgar, where we, the British, triumphed in the Napoleonic Wars. We, the British, triumphed against the French. And the symbol of our triumph can be seen in Nelson's Column, which stands in Trafalgar Square. This, of course, is so obviously a symbol of British dominance that there used to be a Nelson's Column in Dublin, and the IRA blew it up because it was so appalling to them that this symbol of British dominance should continue to be there. So it's a symbol of British victory. It's a symbol of British power. In Trafalgar Square as well, of course, you have the National Gallery, where we have the paintings of all of our brightest and best people, or at least we used to before it became woke. And it is in Trafalgar Square. In a sense, it's the sort of symbolic Christian heart of the country, in a way, because it's in Trafalgar Square every year that a Christmas tree donated by the King of Norway, is erected. So it's almost like the beginning of Christmas in England is when the Christmas tree goes up in Trafalgar Square. So it's highly symbolic. It's a symbol of English and of British imperialism, English and of British dominance, and they know that. So of all places to publicly gather, it's Trafalgar Square. Secondly, why is it not mixed sex? It's open to everyone. It's not mixed sex, is it? It's just men. Well, partly, of course, that's because that's the way Islam works. Islam is highly patriarchal, and men and women are separated in the mosques, and they are separated during prayer. But also, it's the fact, it's the symbolism of a large number of men. A large number of men coming together like that. It's saying, look at us, we are an army. We are an army, and we have gathered on your sacred space, on the space that symbolises your national identity, the space that symbolises your history, your imperialism, your dominance, the time when you were great. We're gathering together here. what you're going to do? And the answer, of course, because we are so cowed and humiliated and indoctrinated with political correctness and just so frozen like a rabbit in the headlights and unable to act, is we are going to do nothing. And this only, we're going to cry and we're going to shout out and we're much wailing and gnashing of teeth, but we're not actually going to do anything. So really, it's a kind of symbolic marking of territory. It's saying, this is our territory now. And we know it's our territory now because of the fact that we've done this and we've got away with it. And you, on your sacred space, and you haven't done anything about it. It's like a dog marking a lamppost as its own territory. Here's your territory. We're on it. We're an army. We're a bunch of men, fit young men, led indeed by the man who is the mayor of London, who you've allowed via your immigration policies and whatever else, and your decadent voting, to become the mayor of London, to become in charge of this broader city, what you're going to do. And that's why it's upsetting us, because we know that the answer is nothing. Because of various problems with our society, that we can, you know, I've gone into many times before, we're not going to do anything. We're just going to take this slap round the face. We're just going to take this humiliation. And traitors among us will say, oh, goodness me, you're racist, you're evil for even being humiliated by it. You're Islamophobic, you're extremist. This is brilliant, this is wonderful. What a diverse city. And do you have the balls to stand up to these traitors? The next thing, and this is interesting, do you ever watch those videos about cat behaviour? If you have a cat, these videos about cat behaviour. And if a cat is not frightened of you at all, if a cat just trusts that you are not going to be a danger to it, certain instincts hit in. It feels it can sleep next to you. A cat is at its most vulnerable when it sleeps. A cat can be killed when it sleeps. So if it sleeps next to you, what it's saying is, well, you can interpret it as love if you want, but you can interpret it, it's not frightened of you. It's not frightened of you. It trusts you won't do anything. If a cat lies on top of you, it's not frightened of you. It trusts you won't do anything. If a cat lies on its back on the floor, it's incredibly vulnerable. It's not frightened of you. It trusts you won't do anything. You are not a threat to it. Well, look at what they're doing when they pray. Now, part of that, of course, is that they are debasing themselves in front of God. But part of that is also that they are debasing themselves in front of you, in symbolically speaking. And they know that they're safe to do that. They're safe to put themselves in the most vulnerable position they could possibly put themselves in. And you're not going to do a thing. That's why it hurts symbolically. They're saying you're cowards. You're weak. We can make ourselves defenseless in Trafalgar Square, in your sacred space. And what you're going to do? Look at the symbolism of when they pray. They bend down and place their bottoms in the air. They are symbolically making themselves as vulnerable as possible. They are essentially presenting their bottoms to God, and as the dominant male, and to everybody else. And if you look at the evolutionary history of the presentation of the buttocks as an evolved behaviour, you see it that when there are fights among, for example, chimpanzees, the weaker chimp will present his bottom to the more dominant chimp in order to diffuse the situation. What he is saying in doing that is, because of course chimps have sex normally, not completely, but normally from behind, he is taking on the position of sexual submission. He is taking on the sexually submissive position of the female. He is saying, I am female. I am weaker than you. I am putting myself in this utterly vulnerable position in front of you. I am nothing. And the dominant male will either accept that, or he might even anally penetrate the lesser male slightly. And then the situation is diffused, and the lesser male, the subaltern, doesn't get killed. Desmond Morris argues in his book, I think it's, it might be The Naked Ape, or I forget which book it is, it's one of his books. He argues that this is how spanking evolved. So what spanking involves, symbolically, is the child normally having to present its buttocks to the parent. Often the buttocks are then exposed as well, so adding an element of humiliation in a society where these are seen as a sexual part of the body and a very private part of the body. And the child is then hit on the buttocks. And then, it's a submission and humiliation ritual in which the child symbolically takes on the position, the sexual position of the female by being forced to present the buttocks. And then it's over and order is restored and the ritual is over and nobody is seriously injured. Well, you could argue that that kind of what's called a Persian beg, that kind of positioning, is doing exactly that. It's presenting the buttocks. It's making you utterly symbolically and sexually vulnerable. It's going to irk me now what the name of that book is by Desmond Morris. I almost have to look it up. Right, let's cut here while I look it up. The book by Desmond Morris is called The Human Zoo: A Zoologist's Guide to the Human Animal. There you go. So that's what they're doing. So like these cats, they're saying, we are not scared of you. We are so confident that you are just weak, that you are pathetic, that you're not, even though you could destroy us, we are so confident that you are not going to do so, that we are prepared to engage in this, make ourselves utterly vulnerable like this, in front of you, on your sacred space, on your patch, confident that absolutely nothing is going to happen. And we're correct. Also, we're correct in that. Nothing is going to happen other than people getting a bit upset. Whereas if they'd done that 50 years ago, 60 years ago, 70 years ago, there would have been an absolute uproar. They wouldn't have dared do it. It's like, in a way, it's like children testing the boundaries to see what they can get away with. They've tested the boundary, they've got away with it. So what next? Well, what next is going to be, as they're considered the only people that have power, as they're considered the only people that have guts, it's going to probably be, you can imagine it, more people, young men converting to Islam. Why is Islam so attractive to people like Andrew Tate and these people that want to signal power? Because it's openly unafraid to be powerful. It's not this feminized way of looking at the world. You'll get more and more men dressed like this. I bought this in the town of Turku in Finland, of all places. So that's why, that no one's talking about the evolutionary reasons for this, but that's why they're having a fuss. That's why we're having such a fuss, because the symbolism of this is so visceral. It reaches into our primal ape-like past, and it does so in a visceral, very powerful way. So I hope this is a bit of interest, and please subscribe again, and subscribe on the Substack and all that stuff, and I will see you soon. And Allah Akbar. And goodbye.
Are you ready for the future of the West?